वादी पाश्चात्य पुष्कारिणी जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सो वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम द 11th कैंटो चैप्टर 3 फर्स्ट वर्स The chapter is titled Liberation from the Illusory Energy. In answer to 4 questions spoken by Maharaj Nimi, this chapter describes the nature and activities of the illusory potency, Maya, the method of becoming free from Maya's insurmountable grip, the transcendental situation of the Supreme Lord Narayan, and the process of Karma Yoga, by which one becomes free from all material activities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of all causes, created the 5 material elements from which the material bodies of the conditioned souls are created, so that the conditioned souls may cultivate either sense gratification or ultimate liberation. Appearing as the Super Soul, the Supreme Lord enters the material bodies of the created beings and activates the 11 senses of the conditioned souls. The conditioned soul misidentifies the created material body with his actual self and thus engages in various fruitive activities. Impelled by the reactions of his own activities, he repeatedly takes birth in various species of life and thus suffers greatly until the time of the cosmic annihilation. When the annihilation is imminent, the soul of the universal form withdraws the entire material creation within himself, and then he himself enters into the original cause of all causes. In this way, the Lord empowers his illusory potency, consisting of the 3 modes of material nature, for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material universe. Accepting the roles of male and female in this material world, the conditioned souls unite in sexual relationships. Although these souls constantly make material endeavors to eliminate their unhappiness and unlimitedly increase their pleasure, they inevitably achieve exactly the opposite result. Permanent happiness cannot be found in this world, either on the earthly planets or on the heavenly planets. I didn't realize it was that long, huh? Which one can attain in the next life after performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices, both on earth and in heaven, the living entity is harassed by the envy and rivalry of others. Therefore, any person who seriously desires to find permanent relief from the sufferings of material existence should take shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. The qualification of the bona fide guru is that he has realized the conclusions of the Vedic scriptures by deliberation, and is able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, should be understood to be bona fide spiritual masters. Accepting the bona fide spiritual master as one's life and soul, the submissive disciples should learn from him the process of pure devotional service, which satisfies the Supreme Lord. By thus following the path of devotional service, the disciple gradually develops all good qualities. One should hear, glorify, and meditate upon the wonderful transcendental activities, appearance, qualities, and holy names of the Lord. Whatever one finds pleasing or enjoyable, he should immediately offer to the Supreme Lord. Even his wife, children, home, and very life air should all be offered at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should serve others and also accept instructions from others. Especially one should serve and learn from those who are pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the association of devotees, one becomes satisfied and happy and develops a loving friendship with the devotees. In this way, one becomes able to give up material sense gratification, which is the cause of all suffering. When a devotee attains the stage of pure love of Godhead, the hairs of his body stand on end, and he manifests various ecstatic symptoms. He personally meets the Supreme Lord and becomes full of transcendental bliss. By learning the science of devotional service and practically engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, the devotee comes to the stage of love of Godhead. When completely devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, the devotee easily crosses over the illusory energy Maya, which is extremely difficult to cross. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe, yet he has no prior cause. Situated within the temporary and constantly changing material world, the Supreme Lord remains eternal and unchanging. He cannot be understood by the unaided mind or senses, and he is transcendental to the manifestation of the material world, which takes place as a subtle cause and material effect visible in the appearance of gross material objects. Although he is originally one, by expanding his illusory potency Maya, he appears in many different forms. He is always free from birth, growth, decay, and death. He is the super soul, the all-pervading witness who perceives the mentalities of all living entities. He is the Supreme Brahman and is known as Narayan. When one seriously engages in devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, the impure desires lodge within one's heart as a result of one's previous work within the three modes of material nature are destroyed. When the heart is thus purified, one can perceive directly both the Supreme Lord and oneself as transcendental entities. Through authorized study of the transcendental Vedic literature, one can properly understand the meaning of prescribed duties, non-performance of such duties, and forbidden activities. This difficult subject matter can never be understood by mundane speculation. Vedic injunctions indirectly lead one to the path of ultimate liberation by first prescribing fruitive religious activities, just as a father promises his child candy so that the child will take his medicine. If an ignorant person who has not conquered the material senses does not perform the Vedic injunctions, he will certainly engage in sinful and irreligious activities. Thus his reward will be repeated birth and death. On the other hand, if one executes the regulated activities prescribed in the Vedas without attachment and offers the result of such work to the Supreme Lord, one attains perfect freedom from the bondage of material work. The material fruitive results offered in the revealed scriptures are not the actual goal of Vedic knowledge, but are meant for stimulating the interest of the performer. If a conditioned soul worships the Supreme Lord Hari by following the regulations found in Vedic literature, such as the tantras, he will quickly become free from the bondage of false ego. When a devotee obtains the mercy of his spiritual master, who reveals to him the injunctions of Vedic scriptures, he worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the particular personal form he finds most attractive. In this way, the devotee quickly becomes liberated from all material bondage. So we have text 1 today. Shri Raja Vacha. Parasya Vishnu Rishasya. Mayinam api mohinim. Mayam velitum icchamo. Bhagavanto bruvantu nah. Shri Raja Vacha.
Yeah. Atunci?
Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. King Nimi said, "Now we wish to learn about the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Vishnu, which bewilders even great mystics. My lords, please speak to us about this subject." Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, in this chapter, various saintly sons of Rishabhdev will speak about the illusory energy Maya, the means for crossing beyond it, the characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and prescribed duties for human beings. The 48th verse of the previous chapter stated, "Vishnor Maya Midam Pashyam." A devotee of Krishna should see the entire universe to be the illusory potency of the Lord. Therefore, King Nimi is now pursuing this subject matter by requesting more detailed information from the saintly yogendras. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the demigods headed by Lord Brahma and the human beings of the earth are all driven by their particular desires for material sense gratification. Thus, they direct their senses towards research for material knowledge. The subtle celestial senses of the demigods and the gross senses of human beings are also busy in ascertaining the measurements of material sense objects. To understand fully the actual nature of Maya, the illusory potency which causes the conditioned souls to become averse to Krishna consciousness and surrender to bewildering material manifestations, King Nimi is inquiring from another of the nine yogendras, Sri Antariksha. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Antariksha, that word means space, I think. That's what it means. Or maybe it means looking inside, Antariksha. So, this subject today is on Maya. The question is, the king wants to learn more about Maya. This also happens in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavatam, the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, where Markandeya Rishi, he requests Krishna, "I want to see your Maya." So King Nimi wants to learn about it, which is wiser, I think. Whereas Markandeya Rishi wanted to see it and it was not fun. So just to remind you, there when he requests to see Maya, Krishna says, "Okay, Naranarayan Rishi, Krishna is in that form." And then there is a big deluge, there is a big devastation, everything is covered in water. Markandeya is exhausted, he's being tossed around by the waves, trying to save himself. There's no sight of any living being, tree, plant, nothing. There's just water everywhere. And then as he's floating, wondering when he's going to die, he sees a tree, a water vruksha. And on that tree, he sees a small baby, it's Krishna. And with the breath of Krishna, he goes inside like a mosquito enters into Krishna's stomach. And inside Krishna's stomach, he sees the whole world, including his house and himself and everything, as normal. And then Krishna breathes him out. He breathes him out and then he comes back out. And then he sees Krishna. Krishna is putting his small baby on a leaf. And Krishna puts his toe in his mouth. So Markandeya is extremely enamored and he rushes to embrace Krishna and suddenly Krishna disappears. So all kinds of interesting things going on Krishna shows him Maya. So now King Nimi wants to learn about Maya and there's going to be a big discussion coming up. Because this is the first verse, I thought that I would set the stage by giving you an overview of what the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam explains. Maya is a principle, as we understand it. Oh Prabhu, I am in Maya. We understand Maya means that which is not. And then Maya also is the mechanism of this world. It refers to the mechanism of how this world is created and the ingredients of this world. what this world contains is also Maya. In fact, everything in the material world is Maya. So let's see how to understand that. I have a PowerPoint presentation. It's a short presentation today. I have a lecture to give at Bhaktivedanta Academy at 8:55. So I have to leave here at 8:53. So, slideshow. This is the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila. When the Supreme Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking to Sanatana Goswami, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching to him, and he discusses Maya in great depth. So the verse is 20.272 Madhya Lila. It starts like this. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead glances over the material energy, she becomes agitated. At that time, the Lord injects the original semen of the living entities. This concept is in the Bhagavad Gita also. So, the next verse, 20.273, says, to impregnate with the seeds of the living entities, the Lord Himself does not directly touch the material energy. So the material energy here is Maya. It's the Lord's energy, or His servant, for performing these material pastimes, material world, in the material world. The Lord Himself does not directly touch the material energy, but by His specific functional expansion, He touches the material energy. It's a very nice, interesting translation. Functional expansion. And thus the living entities who are His parts and parcels are impregnated into material nature. Here Prabhupada writes in the purport, the words Svanga Vishesha Bhasa Rupe, indicating the form by which the Lord begets living entities in the material world, is explained. He is Lord Shiva. Prana Govinda Prabhu gave a lecture on this once, that the glance which contains the souls is conveyed by Lord Shiva in his Shambhu form to Maya Devi, who is Parvati, Durga. So now, this is too small, hopefully everybody can see it. I just wanted to lay out the structure of Maya. So here's Krishna, but as Prabhupada said, he's in his expansion form, Mahavishnu. This is from the fourth canto. I forget where the verse is, I made this some time ago. So Krishna, who's in the form of Mahavishnu, impregnates the souls into Prakriti. Prakriti is nature, that's the Sanskrit word for nature. And Prakriti is an alternative word for Maya, which is what the Antariksha is going to explain. So Prakriti is an alternate word for Maya. Krishna has impregnated the souls into Prakriti. Prakriti is Maya Mayam. That means it's made of Guna Mayam. That means it's made of the Gunas. We know the Gunas. Sattva Guna, Raja Guna, Tama Guna. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. So the souls are impregnated into this Maya Devi, who is Gunamayam, Gunamayi. This word comes in the Bhagavad Gita. Daivihi Esha Gunamayi, Gunamayi Maya. Maya is made of gunas. And then there is a passage of time. And as the time passes by, these gunas that are present in Maya become agitated. Now this is all not very easy to understand. I'm just telling you how it is, but I'm not here to explain how this works. So the passage of time agitates the gunas, from which comes so these are all transformations. Prakriti with gunas transforms them into something else, which transforms into something else, which transforms into something else. Transformation means it becomes of a different flavor. So this Maya, Prakriti, it transforms into what's called Mahatattva. Mahatattva. So Mahatattva is the passage of time after the souls have been injected into Prakriti. What emerges, the transformation, is Mahatattva. But there are two types of Mahatattva, just to make things interesting. One is Mahatattva in Sattva Guna, mode of goodness. And the other is the Mahatattva in Tamaguna, mode of ignorance. And so this Mahatattva in Sattvagun transforms into Mahatattva in Tamagun. That's another transformation that happens. Okay, let's go to the next slide. This is a little bigger, so you can see. So the Mahatattva in Tamagun, that's where we were on the previous slide. becomes ahankar, false ego. It transforms into what's called ahankar. So, at this point, from the false ego, the three gunas as we know them, which are discussed in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, they manifest as separate entities. So, from ahankar and false ego, which is the source of all these gunas now, comes sattva guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna. We know what these are. And then the sattva, raja, and tamaguna give rise to further transformed products. The sattva guna transforms into the mind. The mind comes from sattva guna. And also the sense of devatas, that means the demigods that govern the senses. We know that all the senses are controlled by the demigods. So the sense devatas, so the devatas are also products of sattva guna. And the mind is a product of sattva guna. Rajagun, the mode of passion, its product is intelligence, that's buddhi, and the 10 senses. And the products of tamagun, the transformations of tamagun, are the sense objects. There are 5, sound, smell, form, touch, and taste. And these 5 sense objects, now these sense objects are abstract entities at this point. You know, it's not like the mridanga here has a form and I can see it. That's not what it is. Form is an abstract concept so far. Nothing has emerged as a concrete entity yet. So, in fact, all of these, you could say, are not physical, tangible things. Ahankar is not physically tangible. You can't point to this. This is ahankar. You can't point to Mahatattva as, okay, this is what Mahatattva is, or this is what Sattva Guna is. These are not tangible entities so far. So the sense objects, sound, smell, form, touch, taste, are basically qualities. Okay? And from these qualities come concrete things. And the concrete things are, the first thing to come is ether, which is translated loosely as space, but it is not quite space. And from ether comes wind. Ether transforms into wind. Wind transforms into fire. That's cut off here. Fire transforms into earth and earth transforms into water. So this is a sequence of the events in the material world. This is basically our philosophy of how the world comes about. So from abstract things, from intangible things, at least abstract to us, come concrete physical things, physical objects. I'm done now, so we don't have any more. Like earth, water, fire, air, ether. And then these take over concrete physical forms that we can see. So the important point here is that the mind is from sattva, sattva guna. The intelligence and the senses are from mode of passion. And the things that make up the bodies and things of this material world are from ignorance. Earth comes from ignorance. You saw that. Tamagun, form, function, taste, touch, smell. These are all products of the mode of ignorance. Tamagun. And all the actual tangible things like earth, fire, water. These are also products of ignorance. The mode of ignorance. So it is no wonder then that in this world of Maya, in this world of forms, forms have the what we call sense objects, form, sense, touch, smell. These have the capacity to delude us because they are born from the mode of ignorance. In the 3rd chapter, Krishna explains, see if I can remember this. Probably not remember it. Indriyasya indriyasya arthe raga dvesha vyavasthitau tayor navashama gachet tau hi pasya paripanthinau. So from the sense objects, indriyasya, the sense objects, raga dvesha vyavasthitau, raga attachment and dvesha repulsion, these two are intrinsically present in the sense objects. And tayarna vashamaga chet, do not come under their influence because they are the enemies on our path, paripanthinam. So, form sense, the sense object of form, the sense object of touch, all these elicit attachment and repulsion inside the mind. That's their quality in the material world. And because of it, we become engrossed and absorbed in the material world. What does attachment and repulsion mean? If we get something in the material world, we want to hang on to it as attachment. And repulsion is, we want something, we don't get it. And somebody or something is in the way. So we are repelled by that somebody or something. We dislike that person. Or we dislike that thing or event that gets in the way of us possessing our attachment. So attachment is something where we are afraid we're going to lose something. We want to hold on to it. Something that we already have. So these two qualities are intrinsic to all sense objects. And of course these arise in the mind. And because they arise in the mind, we are constantly buffeted by what we call material desires, which is just another word for this attachment and repulsion that comes about in the mind. And the reason for that, we can see, is because these are products of tamogun, the mode of ignorance. So Krishna is saying, Tayorna Vashamagachet, do not come under the control of these. Because if you come under the control of these, then you fall into Maya. This is what we say mean when we fall into Maya. The sobering thing about this chart or this description in the Bhagavatam is that everything in the world is Maya. There's nothing, whether it's Sattvagun, the devatas, whether it's our intelligence, the senses, the sense objects, Ahankar, going back to Mahatattva in Tama, then Sattva, going back, going to Prakriti, you know, everything is Maya, the whole material world. And our interactions with the sense objects is also giving rise to further illusion. This is why the process of Bhakti Yoga is so critical. If you want to free ourselves, as this chapter will explain and we read in the introduction, if we want to free ourselves from this material world of Maya, not only after death, but while we are in this material world, then we want to convert these sense objects of this material world into vehicles of bhakti. Form, smell, touch, sound. Instead of receiving the sense objects of the material world which elicit attachment and repulsion, we receive the sense objects which are related to Krishna. The same things in the material world, if they are Krishnaized, then they lose the power of attachment and repulsion. Krishna is on the altar here and he has a form and I'm smelling the flowers offered to him. These don't have the power to elicit attachment and repulsion in the sense of the material, in the material sense of the world. They don't have the power, these don't have the quality, I should say, not the power. They don't have the quality to elicit attachment and repulsion. Rather, they have the quality to purify us of attachment and repulsion. So it's the opposite. This is a very deep concept in our Vaishnava philosophy. The Jnanis will reject the material world completely. Nothing in the material world is worth engaging with because it elicits attachment and repulsion in the mind. But the Bhaktas, they see Krishna in the material world. We saw this a few verses back, maybe several verses back, in the definition of the Uttamadhikari and so on. So not only that, not only are we reminded of Krishna indirectly by the objects in the material world, but Krishna manifests himself in the material world for us in the form of the deity, in the form of the spiritual master whose body appears material to us, but it doesn't have the quality of attachment and repulsion. It purifies us. So everything in the material world can purify us, the same things that are right now engaging us in or trapping us in Maya, when those things are connected with Krishna in one way or the other. So this is Bhakti's philosophy. Bhakti is the use of the senses in the service of Krishna and connecting all sense objects to Krishna. I mean, that's basically what it is. Replacing all material sense objects with sense objects that remind us of Krishna. Are related to Krishna in some way or the other. Smell, touch, sound, form, and so on. So it's why do we need to know all this detailed description of Maya and how it comes about? Sridhar Swami comments in the first chapter of the first canto that this sthiti bhanga pralaya, sthiti is maintenance, pralaya is destruction. All these are the leela of the Lord. Praveshan niyamana leela, that's what he calls it. Praveshan is the Lord enters as the super soul into the material world, and niyaman controls the material world. So this is also a leela of the Lord. And hearing about these descriptions is purifying for us. Even descriptions of Maya and how Maya comes about because of the glance of Vishnu is transcendental because it purifies us because it's Krishna Leela. Although it's not Krishna Leela in the conventional sense, Krishna is not enjoying here, but it is his activity and therefore it is Krishna. So in that sense, the material world, his energy and what's going on, including the Maya that traps us, is non-different from Krishna. Sridhar Swami also comments in the commentary on the first verse of the first chapter, yat mithyataya mithya sargopi satyavat pratiyate tam param satyamiti. Yat satyataya mithya sargopi satyavat pratiyate tam param satyamiti. What is the absolute truth? In the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is described as the satyam param dhimai, the supreme absolute truth. Let us meditate on the supreme absolute truth. So what is that supreme absolute truth? Sridhar Swami defines it as, it's that truth by which this illusory material world appears real, completely real to us. That is the supreme absolute truth. Yat satyataya, mithya, illusory, sarga, his creation, api, even though it's unreal, satyavat pratiyate, it looks real, as if it's real. Tam param satyamiti, that is the supreme absolute truth. In other words, Krishna is the supreme absolute truth because he can perfectly pull the wool over everyone's eyes. Nobody knows. So anyway, I'll stop here. And if there are comments, questions, can master me further.
The ahankara coming after Mahatattva and Tamagun and before the three modes, it seems that it's a little different than the, at least the common conception of ahankara, which is individualized, you know, acting out of false ego, you know, misidentifying himself as my body. Is it a different false ego?
The ahankar there is a broad concept, and then the reflection of that broad concept is at the individual level. It's just the ahankar that we have is the exact same ahankar that's there, except that that ahankar applies at a almost a conceptual level, because it differentiates between sattva, rajatama, and from that conceptual level come the concrete things of the material world. So it's almost like, you know, if you say form, and form is a general thing, but I have a form. The same way ahankar is a general thing, but I have ahankar.
Is it a collective illusion of all the jivas that have been injected into the...
No, it's more a common underlying principle. It's not a, at least the way I understand it. It's not that it's subdividing into different ahankaras for the minute jivas, but rather it's a common underlying, you know, like prakriti is material energy. It's a common underlying thing, but we are made up of prakriti.
Just by the phraseology, you know, Prabhupada's translation, false ego, indicates, you know, some... That there's a personality experiencing an illusion.
So ahamkar is a concept. Aham means I, kar means I-ness. You know, saying I or thinking I am the material world, that's ahamkar. So now the word ahamkar is being used there also in the chart. But they haven't changed the meaning of the word. The meaning of the word hasn't changed. Still is I-ness. And from I-ness comes sattva, raja, and tama, and then all the other things come. So even though it's not applicable directly to individuals at that stage, it still has the same meaning of I-ness. That's why I'm saying it's. Yeah, this is a. Yeah, I'm just. There are my hands up.
Can you explain the difference between mind and intelligence?
The mind, there are subtle levels inside the body at which the body functions. And there are hierarchies of these levels. Okay. So in the third chapter, in the last verse, Krishna explains this. Indriyani paranyahur indriyabhya paramanaha manasastu parabuddhirya buddhehe paratustu saha. So the senses are what you can see, the eyes, you can see me right now, right? The body, that's the outermost hierarchy, you could say. Then, subtler than that, subtle means now I can't see you, is this indriyani indriyabhya paramanaha is the mind. That's the next level. You can't see my mind, but you would deduce that I have a mind, hopefully. I haven't lost it yet. Then subtler than that mind is the intelligence. And subtler than the intelligence is the soul. So these are deeper and deeper and deeper, subtler hierarchies of how the body functions. Of course, getting to the soul is not the body. So the example is given that the senses are active always. But when the body is asleep, the senses are not active, but the mind is active. But when the body is in deep sleep, the mind is also not active, but the intelligence is active. So the idea is that the intelligence, when we make it strong by engaging it in scriptural study, if it becomes strong enough, then it can curtail the mind's fantasies. And the mind's fantasies are triggered by the senses of interacting with the sense objects. So in other words, the intelligence is stronger, can be stronger than the mind. Now what's the difference between the two? This is the hierarchy, but also the function is different. The mind has the task of making suggestions to the intelligence. Let's do this. This is a good idea. And the suggestions are triggered again by the fact that the senses have perceived certain sense objects, which has elicited either attachment or repulsion in the mind. So the mind might be repelled by something and makes a suggestion to the intelligence. Because the intelligence is subtler, because it is more powerful. The intelligence consent is necessary for the soul to go along. If the mind is attached to something, it's going to make a suggestion to the intelligence. Now, those with weak intelligence essentially have no free will. Because what the intelligence does is, okay, mind, that's a good idea, let's do that. And then, oh, that's a good idea, let's do that. And it's just a train wreck of bad decision making. The decision making lies with the intelligence. Now, why is the intelligence weak? Because there is no scriptural guidance. So how to make the intelligence strong is to take instruction from scripture, which is passed on to us by the Guru. The instructions are given, crystallized from the scripture to us by the Guru. When the intelligence becomes strong, then the mind continues to make suggestions. It's not that the advanced devotees are not, you know, getting this flow of, you know, sense information. But it's their intelligence that discriminates and says, no, nothing doing. And when the intelligence does so, then the soul is protected and continues to go along the path of self-benefit. Acharati atmanah shreyas tathayati paramgatim. And then goes back to the spiritual world.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ragatmika Mataji had a question, and Maharaj has a question, and Devakam Prabhu and Pranavinda Prabhu.
In the summary of the chapter, it stated that the soul of the universal form at the time of annihilation withdraws. Well, maybe the metaphor, but that was an interesting expression. The soul of the universal form, as if to say, Krishna, because Krishna is the universal form.
Uh-huh. I see.
And his form is different from him. It kind of reminds me of Paramananda Puri.
So, see, the universal form is still Krishna's prakriti. It is actually maya, because the universal form is composed of material things, as described in the 11th chapter. But Arjuna is being reminded of Krishna because he sees Krishna in this universal form. Just like you would say, rasom apsukanteya, the taste of water I am. But is water Krishna? No. Ontologically, water is not Krishna. Water is Krishna's energy. In the same way, the universal form is not Krishna, it's Krishna's energy. But devotees, when they see it, can be reminded of Krishna, can see Krishna in the universal form. Now, the soul of the universe is a different thing. The soul of the universal form means Paramatma. This is the super soul. Now, the super soul is ontologically Krishna, Krishna's expansion, and is pervading Maya Tatam Idam Sarvam Jagad Avyakta Murtina. He's not perceivable in his form, but he is pervading the whole, at all the atoms, the whole material world. So that's what that soul of the universe refers to. Is that okay? Thank you. Maharaj, have a question?
Just a quick note, or I guess it can be converted into a question.
Mm-hmm.
The last two points. The last point is you'll find also that the universal form is also considered the body of Lord Brahma.
Oh, Brahma. Okay.
That is also there. Mm-hmm. As far as the difference between the intelligence and the mind, mm-hmm. the previous question that came up, I always find it very easy to present the analogy of the chariot, mm-hmm. because that really specifies the whole hierarchy. And what's interesting, and I was expecting you to point this out, which you did, mm-hmm. is that the intelligence can also go astray, Gabishuddha Buddhaya. The intelligence can also misguide. In other words, if you have the driver, which is like the intelligence, who's got the reins, which is like the mind in his hands, and he's properly controlling the horses, which are like the senses, everything seems very nice. But supposing you're a passenger in a taxi, and the taxi driver is very expert. He knows how to drive very well, but he's driving in the wrong direction. So I guess when you get to the bigger and bigger picture, then you finally get to the soul and super soul. But anyway, it's just a suggestion. What is it, from Katha or Kena Upanishad?
Yeah.
The analogy of the chariot, because it covers all the bases. There's even a picture of it in the Bhagavad Gita.
Was that clear to you? Did you get? I'm asking you, was that clear, what the analogy of the chariot? Okay. No. Thank you, Miles.
Thank you.
Yeah, at one point when you were saying the mind, the intelligence, and then there's the false ego, the Jesus. So
in that verse it says manasistu para buddhiryo buddhe paratastu saha. Saha there means the soul. So the false ego is not included in that hierarchy.
So it's stated from the ahankara comes the mahatta. Yeah. From the whole creation. So is it from the ahankara of the jivas the whole creation comes about, or by the
I didn't really catch that. Can you hold the microphone closer? Because I can hear
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
From the ahankara, that comes the mahatattva. The ahankara of the living entities, then comes the mahatattva. Then comes the whole material creation.
So where does it say that?
This is a...
Keshav Prabhu?
That's the second part of this.
Okay.
Second part of the... It's analogy. The first part is that Sangsa Bhava Abhesh Rupa. So I'm just going to briefly just explain that what I understood from Prabhupada. That from the personal Brahma, Purna Brahma, this Nirvishesh Brahma emanates. And then by the sweet will of the Lord, the Nirvishesh, part of the Nirvishesh Brahman covered by illusory energy. That is called Mahatattva. So Mahatattva takes birth there, and when Prabhupada writes, when the conscious reality manifests in that Mahatattva, that is turning back to Brahman. And when that part of the Brahman is covered by the illusory energy, that is Mahatattva. So that's like that's what the devotional service indicates. Now on this verse, you will see Prabhupada also put it in the translation. Translation, the second part it says, Prabhupada writes, when egoism in ignorance is educated by the sex energy of the Supreme Persons of God, the subtle element sound is manifested. And from sound comes the ethereal sky, sense of hearing, and then all the sense objects and everything else.
Sound is the first sound is sense the first. Object, yes.
The origin of the sound is also Krishna's sex energy. And then there's a commentary on what is Krishna's sex energy. It's Lord Shiva, actually, Shiva Linga, that's all the manifestation takes place. It's very sweet, but it's a vast subject matter. Now I'm going to, that's from just 1 minute, if you can know. That you put in the PowerPoint, Sangso Bhava Aves Rupa. It's very significant. This is only one of the four inherent quality of Sambhuta Prasidha. Sangso Bhava Aves Rupa means the soul by constitutional right, constitutional position, constitutional structure and constitutional nature, all these four, do not have any trace of Maya. So it is not possible soul to experience the sense pleasure of this world. So then Sangso Bhava Aves Rupa, Prabhupada gave a very nice purport if you look at it. That because the soul, due to misuse of free will, got allured by the illusory energy, desire and joy, then a particular Shiva quality, Shiva has a legitimate right to enjoy Maya as much he wants. There is nothing wrong. This is his energy. That consciousness enters into the front Govinda Das or soul's body, then I will think, I am also legitimate enjoyer of this world. Otherwise, soul will be constitutionally as a servant. It is not possible he should act as a master. Because the Shiva, that is the false ego. That Sangso Bhava Avesh that enter into me, that is the false ego for me. But origin of false ego is in the Shiva. Sambhuta Krishna. The same but not same.
Yes. Thank you, Guru. Is there anything else? Madan Mohan Prabhu. If then we have time, I want to respond to Prana Govinda Prabhu. Yes, that creates a problem in my mind. Yes. I have to go in 3 minutes. Microphone? It's not working? This reminds me of that verse, Indriyanam hi charatam yan mano anuvidyate tadasahrati prajnam vayurnavam imamasi. When the mind focuses on one of the senses, see the senses are constantly roaming. Prabhupada translates that, charatam, they are roaming. And when the sense attaches to some sense object that elicits a reaction in the mind, then by that the intelligence is swept away. Just like the wind blows away the boat on the water. Not the motor-powered boat, but the sailboat. So tadasaharati pradnyam vayurnavam vibhandasi. That's the analogy Krishna gives. So the senses are roaming. The mind, if it latches on, then it's going to drag the intelligence along. Unless the intelligence is situated in scripture, then it's fine. But a response to Pranagavendra Prabhu's point, and then I'll really go, is that it almost seems that if you say the false ego, I understand it comes from this capacity to enjoy of Shambhu with Maya. The false ego does. But it comes because the soul has a problem. You said that the soul is originally pure. If the soul is perfectly pure originally, it has no desire to enjoy independently of Krishna. It's not nitya buddha. Then imposing the false ego on it would be unfair.
He misused the free will to look at Maya.
But but the way you presented it was that that's because of the false ego that came from Shambhu. From Shambhu's original glance at Maya.
But there's a little tips before that.
Yeah.
He developed desire to enjoy the allure of, by the allure of Maya.
So then that there is a problem with the soul. Intrinsic issue, right? Of there is an intrinsic problem with the soul, extrinsic to the false ego. It's not the false ego, it's the soul. And then the false ego is just facilitating that impure desire.
This answers when this is very true. What you said is so nice. When they read the morning walk, I think Ramaswami Prabhu mentioned this. Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddheshwar janakrishpati, that Lord is directing each soul. He made a machine and he sits inside and he's directing to the wandering of the world. So then why not Krishna direct each soul to come to him? Problem is solved, Prabhupada. Why Krishna, since he's directing? So Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna is not directing according to his desire. Krishna is directing according to your desire.
Yeah.
So then the disciple asked Prabhupada, so that means we have to desire to come to him and serve him. Prabhupada said, yes. Then problem is solved. So this is the way we're doing. I have a little one joke for 1 second.
Yes.
Achyutananda Prabhu said, when Prabhupada was going on a morning walk, not morning walk, just a little distance, Achyutananda Prabhu says that Prabhupada, they introduced Prabhupada, this is Empire State. And then one devotee made a joke, you know, some people jump and they kill themselves. Prabhupada said, yes, mind will say jump and intelligence will say don't.
Hare Krishna.
Ramananda asked Prabhupada, how do you tell the intelligence from the mind? And he says, you're at the top of the building, and the mind says jump, and the intelligence says don't jump.